This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
What's good, everybody? She's Amber Wilson. I'm Freddie coming in for the guys today on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, as well as TuneIn presented by Progressive Insurance. 10 minutes away from hearing Amber talking about why Miami Dolphins fans are not exactly mad about the team tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton trying to bring them to their organization. That comes your way in about 10 minutes. But real quick, Amber, so many people having so many thoughts about Vin Scully passing at the age of 94, so synonymous with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And you live in a city where people love their announcers being synonymous with the Dolphins or the Miami Heat. A lot of people having a lot of feelings about Vin Scully no longer part of us in terms of being on planet Earth, but his legacy is going to continue far, 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 far into the future.
Yeah, and what a legacy it was. A voice that quite literally, Freddie, defined generations, mm-hmm. right? Not just a generation, but imagine the generations of Dodgers fans who grew up with Vin Scully narrating one of the most important and fun aspects of their lives, right? A component of their life, like for all of us, where sports brings us so much happiness and joy, and yeah. we've made it such a big part of all of our lives. And Vin Scully was the narration of that for generations of Dodgers fans. Just a remarkable career, a remarkable man. Everybody always talks about how he was so humble. Just a remarkable person in every way, and one who has left his mark on our industry in a way that, frankly, I don't think is ever going to be matched.
Yeah, Vince Scully, there's plenty of Vince Scully and Scullyites out there, male, female, young, old, no matter who you are, because that's the kind of influence that he's always going to have. Let's bring in Ned Colletti, who got a chance to know Vince Scully. He's a former general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He joins him at Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Ned, you heard what Amber had to say in terms of the legacy and so many people being influenced by Vin Scully. You had a chance to get a chance to be around him as a general manager of the Dodgers. What was it like being around that man, that persona, when it comes to Vin Scully?
Well, I was with him for probably 14, 15 years, and every day you were around him, and we all know when we're around people, the same people all the time, you kind of take it for granted, but it was always special. I always knew that I was in the presence of somebody who I had so much respect for. Take the broadcasting out of it, and he was the best to ever do baseball. Just the gentleman that he is and the grace that he went about his life with and how he treated people. I had so many great conversations with him and just so many just wonderful times with somebody. And you didn't even really didn't know that he was even like the broadcaster of the Dodgers for 67 years, you know? Wow. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being. One of the best people, and I say this with no exaggeration, one of the best people I've ever known in my life.
Ned, you put out on Twitter, you tweeted out that Twitter isn't big enough for the stories and the memories. Either is ESPN Radio, I'm sure, but give us your favorite Vin Scully memory.
Oh, goodness. Well, there was one that this is a little different than what people are saying, but it showed his passion and stuff. He'd sit behind me on the bus, okay, and we lost a tough series, and we're going out to the airport, and I was being the second seat, left-hand side, being a third seat, left-hand side, and I heard him whisper up to me, okay, and, you know, use a profane word about the way somebody had played today.
Really?
And I thought this is like hearing the Pope say something like that, you know? But he had such a great passion for it, and he was just a regular guy in so many ways, but never let his stardom or his celebrity, and he's so big in this city and in this sport, but never ever let it get ahead of him. One of the personal ones, I think. I've got two I put on Twitter today. I'll tell you one if you want to hear the other one. You got sure. the time, I'll tell you the second one. But my daughter, Jenna, was a intern for the Dodgers, and so they got to know each other pretty good. And I told him one day, I says, hey, Jenna's getting married in September. And he says, we're from Chicago, and he says, well, I don't want to be presumptuous to think that Sandy and I would be invited, his wife. But, you know, we'd love to do something for her. I said, that's okay. He goes, no, 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 no. You think of something, you let me know. So a couple of days went by, and I said, "Hey, would you mind? You know, you wanted to do something for Jen and her husband. Would you mind reading the you know, the bridal party announcement, and then we'll play a tape at the wedding?" And he goes, "Oh, I'd love to do that." Mm-hmm. So we did, and we're in Chicago, and people know him worldwide, obviously. And when his voice, and nobody knew it, my daughter didn't even know it. And you know how the receptions go when people are out in the hall and are going to be let in when they get announced. And he comes on to recording, and the place stood and gave a standing ovation. They gave a standing ovation, as they always do, to the husband and the bride. But they also gave a standing ovation to Vin, who was 2,000 miles away. But that's just who he is. I mean, who does that? In that stature and in that type of aura that he had, it shows you kind of who he is.
Wow.
And you know, I will always, always miss him. My last conversation with him a couple months ago, he sounded tired, and his wife had just died within the last few months, and you could tell he was hoping to see her soon.
Wow. Graced up by Ned Colletti, former Los Angeles Dodgers general manager, on the life and times of late great Vince Scully, joining Freddie Cohen and Amber Wilson on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. We mentioned, in terms of being synonymous, not too many times, but I think this is the last of his like we're going to see, where someone is synonymous for that long with not just a team, but also a city, especially in that city where you got the Dodgers and the Lakers and now the Rams and the Chargers being back there. Could you even put into words what kind of seismic effect Vin Scully being synonymous with that city, where we might not, or probably will not, see anybody of his like ever again, Ned?
Well, I think what Vin did is he brought a massive city of great diversity together as best he could. And not necessarily by design, although it would have been his design, but just because people trusted him. And I can remember going to the stadium when I was with the Giants and with the Cubs, and they used to play like the radio broadcast in the stands, and you would hear it on transistor radios. You'd also hear it there, but you also heard it on the 405, and you heard it on the 101, and you heard it during earthquake situations in Northridge and civil unrest in Watts and other places of town. And I think that he had just the way about him was trusting. And so when you were going through anything in life, whether it was personal, whether it was social, whether it was, you know, where the city was in the magnifying glass of the world, you always had Vin. You always had Vin, who would tell you a story on a baseball game, get you away from, you know, your trials and tribulations, so to speak. And I think that is a unique quality. I've never known anybody else who could do that. And he didn't do it on purpose, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
He just did it. And if you ever listen to when Hank Aaron beats Babe Ruth's home run record in Atlanta, and you ever listen to what he says on that broadcast, it tells you a lot about him. And that carried on. That was in the early 70s. That was 50 years ago, probably. Mm-hmm. So just a life well lived, and a gentleman among gentlemen.
Real quick, Ned, before we let you go, what was your final conversation like with him?
He was happy to hear from me, and we talked for a little bit about the team and different things like that. And I just said, "Hey, you know, how you doing?" And I didn't have to say after Sandy had passed. And he just, you know, he was just kind of tired and a you know, happy we had talked, but you know, just seemed to be waiting for his turn, I think is what he said.
Okay.
And hey, that's how it went.
Well, hey, Ned, we really appreciate the time, because we know it's been a tough day, not just for you, but everybody that's a baseball fan, a Dodgers fan, an L.A. fan. We really appreciate the time you gave us to talk about the life and times of Vin Scully, and you take care and be well, my friend.
I appreciate you having me on. We'll never know another one.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Ned Colletti, great stuff by him from a Los Angeles Dodgers general manager who knew Vin Scully for 15 years, joining us on Barton Hahn and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get renter's insurance to protect the things that make your place a home, including coverage for theft or damage. All you got to do is visit Progressive.com. She's Amber Wilson. I'm Freddie Coleman. You can always weigh in at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Tom Brady, as we switch gears to the NFL, Amber, he turns 45 today, but you're down in Miami. The Miami Dolphins, they're going to lose a first-round pick and a third-round pick because of tampering involving Tom Brady and also Sean Payton. In your opinion, because you live down in that city, Was it really that close? But Tom Brady could have been doing his 45th birthday as a Miami Dolphin and not a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
It appears it was relatively close anyways, and I had been screaming it, frankly, from the mountaintops. I kept mentioning it on air over and over again over the last 6 months. Like, hey, these reports out of Miami, it seems true that the Dolphins were going after Tom Brady and Sean Payton, and that both of those guys might have fake retired in order to try to find their way to the Miami Dolphins. Like, think how unbelievable that is. And yet, for some reason, I felt like, frankly, outside of Miami, the story was really quiet. And then we get this bombshell investigation from the NFL, this report, the result of a six-month investigation is, oh yeah, by the way, that was actually a real thing.
Wow.
I'm not shocked by it because of all the rumors that were coming out of Miami at the time. I'm also not shocked by it, Freddie, because we're talking about a desperate owner, and this ends up backfiring in a big way. It doesn't go well, and you never want to get in trouble for tampering when you actually weren't successful in the tampering, right? That's the result of all of this. He doesn't get those guys. He just gets punished for trying to get those guys. But it's a desperate owner. Stephen Ross is up there in age. He wants to see the Dolphins have some semblance of success under his tenureship. They have had absolutely none. In fact, you're talking about a franchise that hasn't won even a playoff game since 2001. Like, this has been a terrible franchise now for decades, and that leads to owner desperation. I think this is a result of that. I know I'm supposed to denounce this.
Right.
The Dolphins fan in me, Freddie, keeps thinking, but man, if it had worked.
It's like the old Chris Rock line.
Terrible.
I'm not saying that I condone it, but I understand. That's what you're telling me
when it
comes to the Dolphins.
Yes. And you mentioned, I'm not saying I'm putting my stamp of approval on it.
Yes. I completely believe me. With you in terms of not, I'm not going to try to put you in that box saying, yeah, I approve what he did. I was like, what he tried to do. With Stephen Ross, though, it seems that this Dolphins organization, and you can speak on this better than I can, I'm just talking about from somebody outside of that city, outside of that organization, it seems that he's the kind of owner that he doesn't mind the kind of missteps that are going to happen to try to do something that has not been done by this organization since the 1970s, and that is win the world championship. He also knows how desperate that fan base is for this Dolphins team to matter that we have not seen in more than a minute. Think about the three franchises that, in my opinion, that the NFL will love to see win a championship sooner than later. You mentioned the Dolphins, haven't won since the 70s. The Oakland Raiders, well, now the Las Vegas Raiders, haven't won since the 80s. And the Dallas Cowboys haven't won since the 1990s. Think of all the teams that have been able to rise up and be part of the NFL and be part of the lineage of the NFL that have won championships. Meanwhile, you have these three historical teams that have been devoid of championships. That's why that desperation is not only there from Stephen Ross, or from Amber Wilson, or from other Dolphins fans, because when you've gone this long not winning a championship, you're willing to try anything and hope that you don't get caught if it means that winning a championship is something you need, that you have to have, and that you have not done for about 50 years in Miami.
Yes, I think it's the drought that you're mentioning. I think it's the storied franchise. Also, with the Miami Dolphins and the history that that team did have for so long and where it is now, I think you're talking about an owner who's 82 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We already have his owner in waiting in Bruce Beal, who also was hit with some ramifications from this NFL investigation. He was fined as well as part of this. He was apparently in a part of the tampering as well. And so Stephen Ross, though, knows, you know, his days are numbered ultimately as the owner of the Miami Dolphins. He's trying to see some sort of success. And Stephen Ross also, Freddie, we're talking about a man who really likes the star power.
Sure.
We know he was the one, he was bringing in, you know, Serena and Venus Williams and giving them, you know, the 0.5% of the team or whatever it was. He was bringing in the stars. He was giving them very, very minor stakes in the teams. He likes the star power in Miami. Miami's a very glitzy city. It's a glam city. And he sort of wants to capitalize on all of that. And so I think part of this is that as well, where you're talking about going after these very proven names. How do you get a bigger name at quarterback than Tom Brady? You don't. That's right. The guy. How do you get a more proven coach and a bigger name than Sean Payton, right? I mean, it would be very difficult to do that unless you can get Bill Belichick to leave the Patriots along with Tom Brady. So I understand also from that perspective, it kind of fits the Stephen Ross philosophy where he probably had stars in his eyes when he was looking at the possibility. And then there's the relationships there. Tom Brady and Stephen Ross, they both have their Michigan ties. Their relationship extends back back year. So does Tom Brady's relationship with the owner-in-waiting Bruce Beal. That relationship also extends back years. So all parties are close in this as well. Another reason that these conversations clearly happened, apparently dating all the way back to when Brady was on the Patriots, which that portion of the story, Freddie, to me, is remarkable. I didn't know that part.
I knew
the part where there was the rumors, maybe there's the fake retirement while at Tampa, he's trying to come to Miami. I didn't know it went back to when he was in New England, inside the division.
Yeah.
Brady is flirting with leaving Belichick inside the division. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Stephen Ross should be very lucky that he is a pro sports team owner, especially in that sport when it comes to the National Football League. Because how many times have we seen the NFL will protect their own against anybody and anything else? Brian Flores brought up tanking charges against the Dolphins. They were able to try to avoid that whole thing of the NFL saying, our investigation didn't show anything of these things and blah, blah, blah. And yet they brought the hammer down. If you want to use the hammer of Stephen Ross being a multi-billionaire, won't be able to watch his team in his own stadium. He can go home watching a 100-foot TV screen with friends and family and shrimp and all the caviar he can have. He can do that for 6 weeks and they lose a first and third round pick. He should consider himself very blessed, Amber, that he is a pro sports team owner, especially in that sport. This is the same NFL that has protected Dan Snyder, the Washington Commanders, at any cost to make sure nothing befalls him. They went after John Gruden and made him lose his job with the Las Vegas Raiders. They will go after anybody they want that brings damage to the Shield. Unless you're an owner of a National Football League team. There's no way you could get away with this in the NBA. Or in Major League Baseball. You couldn't be in the NBA, for example, and be a New York Knicks team owner and you tamp with the Brooklyn Nets to try to entice Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Adam Silver to come down hard on you. You might not be around your team for a whole year. But in the NFL, if you're an owner, they'll say, come on, Steven, you know better than that. We told you to stop playing. He does not even have to worry about losing his team, much less being away for 6 weeks for the part of the 2022 season.
I disagree with you on this front. I do think that the other leagues do the same thing in terms of protecting their owners, particularly the NBA, because we see the NBA, we see tampering all the time in the NBA. Right now, the Knicks are being investigated for tampering with Jalen Brunson. Now, given, I don't know how your dad doesn't tamper with you. I don't know how you don't speak to your dad until June 30th or whatever it was. That was the start of free agency.
That's not exactly tampering. That's just family honor.
It feels like it. And when your godfather's running the team and your dad's former agent and all that, all the ties there for the New York Knicks with Jalen Brunson. We knew there was going to be tampering in that situation. Nevertheless, they're still getting investigated for it. These NBA teams that do it, they get hit with draft picks, but it's not nearly as impactful as getting hit with, frankly, what the Dolphins just got hit with draft pick-wise. I think generally, honestly, the NBA also handles it a bit like a slap on the wrist when we see these players be tampered with in the NBA. I think the tampering in sports just isn't taken quite to the same degree that maybe we would have expected on the outside. But I do think it is a big deal that they took away that 2023 first rounder, which was the Miami Dolphins first rounder. Now, the Dolphins still have a first rounder in 2023. But Freddie, they had two. And the whole reason that they had two and that they maintained two, even with the Tyreek Hill haul that they gave away, even with all the toggling back and forth they've done in the last two drafts, they kept those two very specifically to address that quarterback position if it was needed in 2023. It would have been the perfect time to do it after getting to evaluate Tua for 3 years. And now they're going to have a much more difficult time doing that if Tua is not their guy. And I think that that portion of this is important. You're right. The rest of it, $1.5 million to Stephen Ross is like, you know, 1 cent to me and you. And not being able to be around your team. I mean, who cares? It's the owner.
Unless it's
Jerry Jones, it's not much of a punishment.
It's not punishment. That's a steak dinner for Jerry Jones when it comes to that being owner of the Dallas Cowboys. But when it comes to tampering, there really is no way that you can legislate this, no matter who you are. You can say, we'll take away a draft pick. That's not stopping people having conversations. It is not going to stop anybody from wanting to do anything they can, even if they go past that line of the rules, to make sure they can get what they want. They're willing to take that risk because, Amber, you mentioned it. It's hurting the Dolphins when it comes to a first-round pick, losing that in 2023. If they're taking both of their picks away, or let's say, hey, Miami, 2023 draft for tampering, you're going to be sitting this one out. You can't draft a player. That's the only way you're going to stop these kind of things from happening. And, Amber, even then, people are still going to try to tamper. They're going to try to do everything they can, fair but mostly unfair in the NFL, to make sure they're no longer a championship-less team, like we've seen with the Cowboys and the Raiders and the Dolphins. And when you have a desperate owner, he is going to be on board with anything to make sure that his final days as a Dolphins owner or leading that ownership group is not going to include a Super Bowl champion.
And would you give up two first-rounders for Tom Brady when he was in his early 40s?
There's no doubt about that. Absolutely. I'm not saying that he's crazy for doing that, but they're not making it hurt when it comes to him. They'll make it hurt on players. They'll make it hurt on fans. They won't make it hurt on their owners.
Yeah. Well, and it's been a huge problem, I think, for the NFL when it comes to the Deshaun Watson situation.
Absolutely.
And how Deshaun Watson ultimately is punished by the independent arbitrator. I mean, believe it, Freddie. She absolutely took into account what the NFLPA was arguing. That, hey, this CBA doesn't just apply to players. Mm-hmm. And if they're not going to punish their owners more heavily under the personal conduct policy, then how do you justify it for player punishment?
No doubt about that. Great stuff by Amber Wilson joining me, Freddie, coming on Bart and Han and ESPN Radio.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Han.
She's Amber Wilson, Freddie Coleman, and Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and TuneIn, presented by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Liberty, Liberty, Liberty Mutual customizes your coverage so you only pay for what you need. We're going to tell you how it is for Major League Baseball, even when the big day happens. We'll do that in a couple of minutes. But Jay in Brooklyn at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. He wants to win the Miami Dolphins, accused of tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. They will lose a first-round pick in 2023 and a third-round pick. Jay, from my hometown of Brooklyn, what you got?
What's going on, man? Thanks for taking the call. Just had a quick comment and then a question for you guys. With player empowerment where it's at, and in the NBA, where you have so many second, you know, generation players, I personally feel that tampering is almost necessary if you really want to compete for talent out there. Even with GMs being, you know, mostly former agents, you know, coming through lately. My question for you guys is, with the penalty of being two draft picks, I think a first and a third to Miami, do you think the penalty was that steep because of the accusation of the offering $100,000 to Flores to, you know, I guess, try not to win? Do you think because they couldn't prove it, but they think there might be some level of truth to it, they may have been a little bit more steep on the punishment?
From my perspective, Freddie, what I feel like happened here is that they do take the tampering seriously because of the integrity of the game stuff, which we know is a paramount concern to the NFL. You saw it with how they punished Calvin Ridley. People always get these things confused, right? With the Deshaun Watson punishment coming down, you heard a lot of, but what about Calvin Ridley? Well, he violated a different portion of the CBA. He violated the league's gambling policy, and that led to an integrity of the game issue. And that is something, for better or for worse, I'm not defending it, but that's something that historically the NFL has put a ton of importance on, and so they punish integrity of the game concerns quite harshly. That's what happened here, I think, with the Dolphins and with Stephen Ross and with Bruce Beal, because it's an integrity of the game issue when you're talking about tampering. And when you're talking about tampering with players and coaches while they're actively under contract with other teams, right? And so that's the real concern here. I don't know if I'm going to take this leap because the NFL said that they didn't find the accusation that Stephen Ross offered $100,000 to Brian Flores for every loss. They didn't find that to be true in their investigation. They couldn't find any evidence of that. They couldn't find corroborating witnesses. So they concluded that there hadn't been tanking in terms of the Miami Dolphins in that, 2020 season. They determined that there wasn't tanking. And so I don't know. I'm not really comfortable then making this leap like, well, they're saying they didn't find tanking, but they're punishing them for the tanking. I don't even think that's necessary. I think, frankly, they punished them for the tampering.
Yep.
And I think what we've seen is that the NFL takes the tampering stuff very seriously. And maybe also what happened here a little bit, Freddie, is I wonder, too, if we're going to see this new wave of sudden owner discipline where, like, now they actually are going to start disciplining owners because they know it was problematic for them when they're arguing for a longer suspension of Deshaun Watson. And they're over here taking things with owners very lightly.
Well, I never trust owners policing owners because I know how that goes. I've seen Dan Snyder still be in charge of Washington. So owners policing owners. Yeah, I'm not going to make that leap either when it comes to the National Football League. But I will say this. I thought it was very interesting that they made it a point to say they didn't find anything when it came to tanking games involving the Miami Dolphins and the ownership group. And for anybody out there that's wondering the same thing like I am, how much and how strong is that investigation into something like that? Because the NFL will protect their owners. Yeah, they punish Stephen Ross and they lose a draft pick and a third round draft pick when it comes to Miami Dolphins for tampering. But it seemed, based on the surface, Amber, they were a lot more vociferous investigating that than any kind of tanking charges what Brian Flores brought to the table when he's the head coach of the Miami Dolphins under Stephen Ross.
I mean, I'd like to think that if they actually found that an owner was paying a coach or attempting to pay a coach to lose games, that it was that kind of tanking, that that would rise to the level of, hey, now we're having a conversation about ownership getting stripped from Stephen Ross, which seemingly that would have been the level it rises to. To your point, then, you can kind of look a little bit sideways at the situation and say, well, they wouldn't want to find that. Because no league wants to take ownership away from an owner. Because like you said, at the end of the day, these leagues are essentially owned by these owners, right? So you don't want to be in that situation. The other owners, the other 31 aren't going to want to be in that situation either because that makes them more insecure about their tenureship with their own teams. And so you don't want to be in that situation. I can understand why people then, if you're a conspiracy theorist, so to speak, are looking a little bit at this like, I don't know about this. But all I can do with it is what we saw with this NFL report is that they didn't find the tanking. I will tell you, as a Dolphins fan, and you know, and a fan who watched this team very close, and was covering it too, but a fan who watched this team very closely back in 2019 during this tank for Tua hashtag era that we were living in. I mean, if they were tanking, they did a very poor job of it, Freddie, because they ended up with Tua Tagovailoa rather than Joe Burrow from that draft. Okay, so if they if they tanked, it wasn't successful.
Jerry in Virginia, what do you got to say about this, my friend?
Yeah, how you doing? Hey, so I understand taking the draft picks away ultimately hurts the owner's bottom line, but at the same time, you're also hurting the players and the current coaching staff. Is there another way that, you know, these guys had nothing to do with that, the players didn't have anything to do with that. Is there another way to maybe punish the owners and not you know, do so much damage to the players and you know, new coaching staff that didn't have anything to do with something like that?
It's a fair question, but I think you have to punish the team. And Stephen Ross owns this football team because he was trying to compromise things to make his team better. So it I don't want to use the word fair or the other word unfair when it comes to this, Amber, but if your owner signed off on something like this, then the team has to get punished. It can't just be, well, leave the players and coaches out of it. That had nothing to do with that.
I don't have as big of a problem with this sort of thing on the professional level as I do on the collegiate level. When we see these college programs and they get punished and you know it's an entirely different team because these teams turn over at least every 4 years, if not sooner, in terms of the student body, obviously.
Yeah.
So now you're having kids punished who weren't there at all whatsoever. It's a little different in professional sports. Obviously, some of those players might have been there back when this sort of thing was happening, or the owner was obviously consistent. The coaching staff might have been been in place. Now, it happens with the Dolphins that they're not, that you've had these changes. But I don't know if that can be part of the consideration of the NFL when you are levying punishments, or it would be nearly impossible to levy any sort of punishment. And I heard Dominique Foxworth on First Take. He made a pretty good point. He said, you know, things are always affected. If we go and we commit a crime right now, then it's going to harm other people in our lives, mm-hmm. right? Where, yes, it might harm your wife or your kids. That can't be the reason, though, that you're not charged or convicted right. with a crime, just because there's ramifications from that. That's sort of like this. I thought it was an interesting point.
And believe me, when plenty of people do stuff like this, they never think about the outcome being bad for them. They only think about a potential better outcome involving their team or involving what's going on. And the Dolphins got caught trying to make that situation better, and now they're going to lose a couple of draft picks and who knows what else when it comes to Stephen Ross. Maybe a fine, how much of he'll lose money, but it's not going to be that much when it's all said and done.
He just has so much of it.
I know. When you got those kind of billions, a steak dinner is not going to bother you if you're Stephen Ross or any NFL owner in the National Football League. Amber Wilson, Freddie, coming part of Barton Hahn, presented by Progressive Insurance and ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, as well as tune in your smart speaker. And who could blink first when it comes to the NFL, Deshaun Watson to the Cleveland Browns, and this word? That's next.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Bart and Han.
Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. Tune in and your smart speaker. And usually when you have a big trade, Amber, that we saw in Major League Baseball, including a massive trade with Juan Soto and another player going to the Dodgers, excuse me, the Padres for prospects, and he refused
You're
that contract
going
early
to
this
the
year.
Dodgers. That's
yeah,
what happened
yeah,
there.
Not that I wanted to go to Dodgers. I'm not a Dodgers fan. But this is what it is for Major League Baseball, because you, I, and Stasiak, our producer, discussing this, that I wonder how much of this would have resonated if he had gone to a bigger market team, whether it's Los Angeles with the Dodgers or the Mets or the Yankees or even the Phillies or the Cubs. And I still wonder, the way Major League Baseball is in terms of a perception, I don't think it would have resonated as much if he had gone to a bigger team or bigger market than San Diego, and now he's with the Padres.
I think we would have all just maybe rolled our eyes. There's another day, right, in baseball. I mean, I think it's so cool, this Juan Soto situation where he ends up with the San Diego Padres. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a beautiful place to live, right? It's a wonderful yes. city, but it's a small market, at least in that sport. And yet it's a market that is into winning. You see the dedication right now to trying to compete sure. with the Los Angeles Dodgers, to try to compete with the deep pockets. And the way you do that is you go after one of the very biggest names and the biggest stars in the sport, who has 2.5 years of control left on his contract. And that's what made all the difference, where we had so many teams in the mix trying to go after Soto because of that 2.5 years left of control. I think it's great for the sport, honestly. I think it's better that he ends up in a different market that isn't necessarily where we are used to seeing the bright light shine. And man, Padres fans, I mean, they have spent a lot of summers watching some lifeless baseball over the years. So it's nice to see them winning right now with a great team.
And I'm glad that Juan Soto is arguably for many people, maybe one of the best players, not the best player in baseball. But if he refused that kind of contract and then he got his wish to go somewhere else and San Diego's going to pay that freight, then what is the market going to look like for an Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees? Because Tim Kirkson said on This Just In with Max Kellerman that he believes once this year is over, Amber, that he's going to be somewhere else in 2023 and beyond. If Juan Soto got his wish and the contract that the Washington Nationals put out there that he didn't want, then what kind of contract is Aaron Judge going to get? Because the Yankees were not willing to sign off on the kind of contract he wanted before these two went to arbitration.
Yeah, we know Aaron Judge just earned all sorts of money so far this season, and he's not done yet, right? I mean, he might break the 60, he might break the 61. Maybe he's going after Bonds' record even, which right now how he's on pace is just phenomenal. He's having a phenomenal season. He's 30, so he's certainly older than Soto, but he's going to get paid, Freddie, and it's probably not going to come from the Yanks.
Yeah, the New York Yankees, you may not have wanted to pay him early or pay him now, but you may want to pay him later when it's all said and done.
Bart and Han.
It could be much ado about nothing at 9 a.m. tomorrow involving Deshaun Watson, the Cleveland Browns, the NFL, and this word. Amber Wilson, that's her. Freddie Coleman, that's me. I'm Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, as well as your smart speaker. Both those entities, the NFL and Deshaun Watson, the Cleveland Browns and the NFLPA, have until 9 a.m. tomorrow to appeal the six-game suspension that Judge Robertson said should be there for Deshaun Watson based on damaging the shield, being involved in all those things involving getting masseuses or getting massages. Both entities, Amber, have until 9 a.m. tomorrow. I don't know if it's a question of who blinks first. It may be a question of the word appeal and how much of that word may not have enough of appeal for the NFL and Deshaun Watson to appeal the suspension that was handed down.
Well, I don't think that we're going to see an appeal come from the NFLPA or from Deshaun Watson. And we knew that even before we got word of what the actual suspension was because of that joint statement that they issued. Now, it kind of gave us an indication that they were probably going to be pretty happy with whatever suspension came down. And they should be pretty happy because it was so significantly less than what the NFL was asking for, where they were asking for at least a year-long suspension.
Sure.
So now the onus, of course, is on the NFL. What do they want to do about the fact that the suspension ends up being so much less than what they were actually asking for? It's not a situation actually that I would want to be in if I was Roger Goodell, because on one hand you have this new collectively bargained system where you brought in this independent arbitrator. She gave you a ruling that maybe would be considered not so favorable to the NFL, again based on what they were asking for. But if you don't respect the process, people are going to look at the NFL if they appeal this, because they're appealing it to themselves. So it's just Roger Goodell and ending up overruling her essentially and levying whatever punishment he wants. People are going to look at that, Freddie, and say, okay, nothing's actually changed under this new collective bargaining agreement. It's still all on Roger Goodell, and we're still going to be criticizing the NFL for however they handle this punishment phase. And then, of course, you're inviting the complication as well as the NFLPA. They probably run to federal court. They might challenge whatever Goodell decides on appeal there. We're kicking the can down the road in that regard. And what happens there and what might come out in federal court. So I wouldn't want that headache if I'm Roger Goodell. But at the same time, you're seeing the reaction, the public reaction to the six-game suspension, a lot of it being very negative, a lot of people having a hard time accepting that he only got six games with the things that he was accused of doing and by how many people he was accused of doing them with. Yeah. And because of that, Freddie, if you're the NFL and you don't appeal, then does it look like you don't care about women? Does it look like you're taking the accusations lightly? And that's not a situation that that could be an easy one for Roger Goodell to navigate, because it kind of feels like, to me, frankly, a lose-lose situation no matter what he ends up deciding here.
I think the NFL is not going to appeal, mainly because they just want to get past this. And your points, Amber, are very valid in terms of what kind of message are you sending by allowing this behavior, these allegations to be put out there, and then you're not going to really bring the hammer down against Deshaun Watson. But there's two things why they're not going to appeal. Number one, I mentioned the first one, getting past it. Number two, timing. The season is right around the corner. The NFL doesn't want any kind of distraction. They can deal with the distraction of the outcry and the blowback from people saying six games is not enough for Deshaun Watson, because they also know that the minute the regular season gets started Thursday night between the Buffalo Bills and the Los Angeles Rams in September, not a lot of people are going to be talking about the NFL not bringing it down a lot harder on Deshaun Watson. They have those things on their side. So Roger Goodell gets paid a lot of money by the owners to do these kind of things, to take all those hits that come with it when it comes to people criticizing the NFL and their practices when it comes to disciplining players. But you're right about the NFL. They don't just don't care about women. They don't care about fans either, because they know that fans are going to come back and consume their product. And as long as a league that made over $4 billion last year in TV ad revenue, as long as they have that on their ledger, they don't have to worry about caring about anybody, what they have to say, and how they're going to engage in disciplinary practices when it comes to players, no matter what that is.
Their product is Teflon, and that's what is going to carry them through. To your point, once the games start up, we're probably going to be talking about the games, particularly if this isn't appealed and if this doesn't go to federal court, right? Because then that does make it more of a story throughout the entire regular season. At this point right now, the NFL can kind of throw its hands up and be like, well, we tried. We were asking for a year to indefinite. We tried, and we didn't get it because of this independent arbitrator. It wasn't on us. We tried. And if they instead file an appeal to themselves again, an appeal to themselves and decide otherwise, now the heat, it goes back on the NFL. The whole reason the NFL, Freddie, agreed to bring in an independent party to make this decision under the new CBA was because owners were tired of that onus being on Roger Goodell. Owners were tired of sort of the narrative around Roger Goodell and the inconsistencies, frankly, with issuing these punishments. And so if you appeal that, now it's all back on Roger Goodell and the NFL. Also, think about the Jimmy Haslam perspective of this, right? As the owner of the Cleveland Browns, is he putting pressure on the NFL to maybe not appeal? Because here is what I'm thinking in regards to that. Obviously, you're probably pretty happy if you're the Haslams with only six games. Also, if you appeal and then you find yourself in federal court, because now Watson and the NFLPA are suing in federal court. Now we're talking about trying to get an injunction so he can play. Now we're talking about this thing going on for months and months and months. And do you want an injunction so that he can play in the first half of the season? Have we looked at that Browns schedule? You'd probably rather just go ahead and knock out that suspension if it's possible from a football perspective, not to minimize again any of the accusations off the field by talking about football. But the reality is, this is football, and once the season starts, it's what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Plenty of this and also more coming up on Canty and Carlin, because if you love Amber Wilson for this past hour, you're going to love her even more as she and Nick Friedell take over Canty and Carlin. And Hall of Fame manager Joe Torre is going to join the show at 6:30 Eastern time to talk about Vin Scully and his impact that he had not only in baseball but in the city of Los Angeles. Canty and Carlin, Amber and Nick Friedell coming up. This has been Barton Hahn on the mighty ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN+. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.